Hi guys, welcome to the IAAF podcast, and I am Ben Harlow.
Not bad. Oh, not yeah. Bad. You guys heard it there, so apparently it's my alter ego, also known as Aries Merritt, trying to impersonate me there. So yeah, welcome to the IAAF Inside Athletics podcast.
And thanks for having me.
So, unfortunately, Katie can't be with us on this week's episode, but we've got a superstar standing in the shape of Olympic champion, world record holder, Aries Merritt.
How you doing?
He's waving. You guys can't see this. It's a podcast.
Yeah, it's definitely waving. A podcast. Definitely waving at you guys. Invisibly, so.
So, first of all, there's a lot that's gone on since the last episode has gone out. I know you listen every week, Aries.
Oh, yeah. I'm such a diehard, you know, podcast listener.
So, since the last episode, a lot has happened. I think first things first, we should talk about the NCAAs.
Correct.
So, you're an ex-collegiate athlete.
Just that is correct.
Brief me quickly on what the NCAAs are for those who don't know and what they're like.
Well, the NCAAs is the pinnacle of collegiate performance. It's the final meet of the year that determines whether or not you'll be a national champion as a collegiate, and it's also a team functioned event that it's scored. So if your team does very well, your team will be national champions, and you get a nice trophy and presentation at the end. Mm-hmm. In addition to you being able to become a national champion yourself. So
why is it every year the NCAAs come around and we get some crazy results? We always end up getting some world leads, and it's happened again this year. What is it about the collegiate competition?
Well, you know, a lot of these collegiates are trying to turn professional. So you see a lot of athletes running blistering times all the time throughout their collegiate ranks, and it's just because of the way they're trained. They're trained to run fast and run fast all the time. Mm-hmm. They're very sharp, meaning they've run a lot of races, north of 30 meets. You know, they're running a lot, and so they're it's not like as a professional athlete, like you see us on the Diamond League circuit, that might be our like second, third, or fourth race, whereas a collegiate would have already run about 25-30 races. And that's so they're crazy. Very, very sharp, and they've learned their race plan, they've executed their race plan. Mm-hmm. many times, and they're just sharp. That's all there is to it.
So this year was no exception in terms of fantastic results. It took place at Hayward Field in Eugene. Do you have a personal highlight of the meet?
I mean, there was a lot of great, great, great performances of the meet. You had the little girl from Georgia. Can't remember her name all the way, but she ran 49 seconds, I mean, in the 400 meters.
Yeah,
don't forget about her. She ran 49.80. I mean, that's really fast.
That's
and she's a freshman.
What?
Yeah, she's a freshman.
So
I think she came in this
freshman generally.
Freshman, like Sydney McLaughlin is the star-studded freshman of the.
She's what, 19?
Yeah, she's 19, 18.
Yeah,
she's 18, 19. Yeah.
Wow.
So
49.
Yeah, she ran 49.8 as a baby, and you know Sydney obviously has run 53, 52 in the 400 meter hurdles, which is just phenomenal as well. Then you saw Michael Norman.
Mm-hmm.
You saw him run 43.6, which is just astronomically great.
Yeah.
So, but I think my favorite performance, I'm not biased because I'm a hurdler, but Rye Benjamin running 47.0 in those conditions, where that was just the performance of the meet for me. Like, he just, that was incredible.
Like, what were the conditions like that?
It was raining. It was around 58 degrees. It probably felt like 50, 48 degrees Fahrenheit. You know, it probably felt awful. I mean, it's already tough enough to hurdle in rain and wind, and, you know, it's really, really tough. And for him to have that level of focus, mm-hmm. and run 47.02 in the 400 meter hurdles, the second fastest time ever in history, that's just, as a hurdler, I have a deeper appreciation for the event, mm-hmm. and that's just phenomenal.
Yeah, no, it really is. And he's competing here in Paris.
I heard he's running the 200 meters.
You know a little bit extra about this. Tell me, because we were talking about this before we came. Why is he running the 200, not the 400?
You know, I really think it's because, you know, he's had a lot of races. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, he's run a lot of races this year. And he's it's probably just to get his feet wet. You know, no point in being thrown into the fire if you're not going to run the whole season anyways. You know, yeah. I don't really see him running the Diamond League final. He's been running since August training, like, yeah. already. So, I mean, the whole year of training, I just don't see that happening.
Yeah.
You know, he has to be smart. And he's probably just going to run the 200 meters, get his feet wet, see what it's like to have a taste. Yeah, I mean, that's what it is, right? Like, a little taste of the circuit.
Yeah.
See how it tastes. Does it taste good? Yeah, you know, who knows?
And he wasn't the only one to turn pro after the NCAAs. It was Sydney also.
Michael Norman turned professional. I think those are the big three that you saw. I think Michael Norman is also here running 200 meters.
That'd be a good face off.
Yeah, and I think the 200 meters that everyone's waiting for is going to be the Lausanne 200 meters, because that's going to be Noah Lyles, Michael Norman. I mean, you name it. Whoever's in the 200 meters is, you know.
Would you ever run a 200 meters?
I would love to run in that field. Let me tell you, if they want to put me in lane 8. Just, you know, I don't care, like, because it's whatever. Everybody in that field is gonna run a PB, so like, let me just go ahead and throw me in lane 8.
What is your PB? 200.
Oh God, I haven't run a 200 since indoors.
22.
No way. I haven't run a 200 since indoors. I ran 21.2 when I was like a junior or a sophomore in college. That's been so long ago. Pretty sure I'm much faster than that, but you know, I don't really run much flat distances open. I'm pretty sure I can run sub 20, or not sub 20, but like sub 21 easily.
I was gonna say, I'm pretty sure.
Or I mean, if I train for it, I'm sure. Like, any world class athlete at this level, if they, you know, switch specializations and literally train for an event, they can definitely run world class times. That's just the nature of the sport.
Like, you see that with Corey Carter going from 400 hurdles to 100
of course hurdles. Like, anybody who dedicates time and energy, that's already world class. You saw it with Ashton Eaton, you know, he ran 400 hurdles in 48.40.
Christian Taylor,
45 seconds, almost 44 of the 400 meters. I mean, we're world class athletes, so
yeah,
you know, we can do world class things.
What could you do then? What other event could you do?
I could do 400 hurdles.
400
I
hurdles.
Used to do it a long time ago, but just that pain, that last 50, like, no. No, I don't know. Like, I'd really have to do some soul searching and I'd really try to dig deep and see if I really wanted to, you know, put myself through 500s and 600s in training. Yeah.
Could you ever do a field event?
I could probably do the long jump. Triple jump, I don't want to do that. I mean, that's really harsh on the knees.
Yeah.
More power to the guys that are jumping, you know, almost 60 feet. Yeah. So, but
what's 60 feet in, like, real money?
I mean, they're jumping like 1770 and up. Like, people that are jumping, well, that's not 60 feet, it's like 59, but you know, that's almost 60 feet. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay, so away from the NCAAs, the US champs also happened. You were there.
Right.
Talk to me about the meet in general as a whole. You were saying only that the weather was a bit ropey.
Well, the first half of the meet was a great meet. You saw a lot of guys in the 100 meters run 9.8.
Yeah,
I think we had two guys run 9.8, and then we had Ronnie run 9.90.
Yeah.
The conditions were really, really good. You saw in the women's 100, 1092 or 1091 or so.
Was that Prandini?
No. It was the LSU girl. God. Her name is Hobbs.
Hobbs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So Hobbs was the winner in 1092. I mean, we had some really, really good times the first half of the meet. But then the second half of the meet, the weather just took a turn for the worst. And we had...
Where was it? Where,
it was in Des Moines, Iowa.
Okay.
And it was really nice at the beginning of the meet, and then it got really bad really quick. They had like some really nasty storms come through, and it was like some of the hardest rain you've ever heard in your life.
Really?
Yeah, so we had on the final day after the women's 400 meter hurdles, there was like a almost 4.5-5 hour delay between the 200 meter men and women's final, I think the steeple final, the men's 5,000 or 3,000 meters open or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the hurdles race for men. It was terrible.
Yeah. Tell me about, well, you said that you ran your heat in semis and then you were having to stay warm for...
Oh, yeah. So after the semifinals, we typically have about an hour and a half, 2 hours max before we're ready for the final. And we literally had almost 5 hours because there were so many delays and so much thunder and lightning. You know, you can't run if there's any lightning clouds or in the vicinity of the competition. So there's like a delay to wait it out and see. And if they would have delayed it any further, I would have definitely pulled out of the meeting because it was just, it wasn't ideal at all for us as athletes to have to suffer through that.
If it was any other year, aka a non-champs year, would you have still raced if it was delayed further?
No.
No, even then you wouldn't have raced.
I mean, if it was a championship year, that's different.
Yeah,
okay, that, so if I mean, and yeah, I would have sat there until like 12 at night and I would have went and got food and whatever the case may be. But if it was a championship, they probably would have sent us home and had us run the next day.
Yeah.
That's it, because it's different circumstances.
I guess it's not as fair, really.
Yeah.
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 Outside of your event, so you came fourth in it. It was a really tight race, actually. With the top two guys. It was a good race.
Yeah.
Despite the times maybe not being as fast as what you're used to over in the US. But outside of that, did you have any particular highlights from the meet itself?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of athletes ran well when the weather was nice. I mean, the track itself is a very fast track.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've seen really, really, really fast times on that track in the past. Kendra won the 100-meter hurdles in 12.4 into a minus, into like a minus 1.7, which is just ridiculous.
She is ridiculous.
Yeah,
right?
she's really, really talented at what she does. Really good athlete. I mean, you see a lot of athletes have run fast there. I mean, all the women's hurdlers ran very fast into headwinds, not just Kendra. Lots of them ran 12.6 into the same. I mean, that's... I mean, that's like essentially 12.4.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're running fast times. But the women's hurdlers are... hurdles in the Americas is like one of the hardest events, period.
What is with that? Why are they so competitive within the US?
I just think that coaches know how to coach hurdles now, and you see, especially women's hurdling, you've seen that go from, I mean, it's always been tough, but now it's just like so many women run 12.3, so many women run 12.4, you know, you have two women that run 12.2, and so if like they're both on at the same time, I mean, that's a world record just waiting to happen, right? So you have that, and you know, the 200 meter women's was good while the weather was great. And then they had that long delay because Jenna ran 22.2. You know, it's been a while since she'd run that. She had been injured for a couple of years, and she battled those injuries, and she working her way back up. So there's that. But I'm pretty sure next year at NCAAs and at USA Nationals, you'll see much, much different results because it's a championship year, and so a lot of bigger names like Allison Felix, Fred Curley. You'll see a lot of these guys that didn't run at our trials, and women. You know, they'll show up because it's championship season.
Yeah. So, where is it being held next year?
It's actually being held in Des Moines again. So we're praying that we don't have, you know, torrential downpours and, you know, atrocious headwinds. But we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
Okay, well, I also, whilst I've got you here, we may as well talk a little bit about you.
Oh.
Little old you.
Oh, yeah.
So, I just want to start off with, you were born, I've done some research.
Oh, God.
Born in Chicago. Correct?
That's correct.
And then you moved to Georgia.
That's right.
And how old were you when you moved to Georgia?
I was three.
Three, okay, so you don't really remember Chicago or anything like that.
No.
Mm-hmm. Did you stay in Georgia during, I don't know, your childhood?
Yeah, of course. So I was raised in Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia area. Actually, Marietta, Georgia, which is metro Atlanta.
Is that just outside the city?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like it borders the city.
Okay.
But yeah, so I was raised in Marietta, Georgia.
How was your childhood?
Oh, my childhood was... I had a good childhood, really. I mean, mm-hmm. we didn't have a lot of money, and so I grew up in a not-so-wealthy area. It wasn't the poorest area, but it wasn't the wealthiest. There was a lot of stuff that went on in the neighborhood that wasn't stuff that you would normally see in normal neighborhoods. Like, you know, drugs and violence, gang violence and stuff. But, you know, I feel like that's kind of normal to see stuff like that, especially mm-hmm. in the South and in that era, you know.
Yeah.
1990s, you saw a lot of stuff like that.
So you were in Atlanta, or Atlanta adjacent, for the Olympics.
I was. Mm-hmm. 2000.
Do you remember much of...
Oh, it was 1996. And, yeah, I just remember watching Allen win. That was pretty much it. Because that's, like, the first thing when I cut on TV, it was just like, oh, the 110 hurdle final. I didn't know at that point I was going to be a 110 hurdler, though. It was just, you know.
It was fate.
It was fate, yeah. Yeah. I always thought I was going to do 400 hurdles, honestly, because I have the build for it. I'm very long-limbed. I have a very long stride pattern.
Mm-hmm.
I can do 13 steps in between for the 400 hurdles. I ran 300 hurdles very, very fast in high school. So
maybe we'll see you there one day?
No, you won't see me there. Not when people are in the 47 holes. No, you ain't going to see me.
You're going to take over Rye Benjamin anytime
soon then? Nope. Not with Samba and Rye. And Karan Clement, you know, when he's informed. I mean, it's just... Craziness. It's going to be nasty. Someone's running 46 within the near future. I can see it.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Okay, so you grew up in a rough neighborhood just outside of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
When did you first find track and field?
I'd always run. I was always a runner at heart. And when I was growing up, my grandmother used to throw these... She'd have these 4th of July events for the kids in Mississippi, and mm-hmm. I would go visit her there, and we would have like these street races, like not like they have in the UK that you're accustomed to, but like literal street races where you're like running on the streets with no tracks. So I did those, and I would win those little races, and it was fun. And every year I would win, and I was racing kids that were like way older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew at that point that I had like a talent for running.
Yeah.
And then I went to Georgia, back to Georgia, and I started running in middle school. I think my 8th grade year, it was the first time I ran on like a club team.
Mm-hmm.
And like I experienced people that were faster than me, and I wasn't used to that. I was like, wait, what? How are you faster than me? And then I worked hard, and I became really, really quick. And then I started doing hurdles, which was a whole nother story in itself.
What is the story?
My coach in high school saw me jump a fence, and then I was the hurdler at that
point. No way.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So I jumped the fence, became the hurdler for the team at that point. Had my first hurdle race my freshman year at the end of the season, pretty much.
How'd that go?
I ran a strong 17.5.
Woo!
Yeah, and I three-stepped the whole way. I was super proud of myself because it was just, at that point, it was just learning how to three-step.
Yeah.
And I was running 8 steps in to the first hurdle at that point.
What is the normal steps to the first hurdle?
I mean, 8 steps is pretty normal. 7 mm-hmm. steps is a little bit more advanced.
Isn't that what you do?
Yeah, steps? I do 7 steps now, but that wasn't the new norm. I mean, back when Allen Johnson and those guys were running, Ronaldo Nehemiah, you know, Roger Kingdom, they were all doing 8 steps, and they were running fast. I mean, you can run fast with 8 steps. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
You hear that, guys? You can run fast with 8 steps. Liu Xiang ran 12:88 with 8 steps. So, you know, you can run fast with 8 as well. And so I started off running 8 steps for the first hurdle, and
this was still in high school.
Yeah, and 3 steps in between, and I dropped a whole second and a half, so I ended up running 15 in like 4 or so races.
Nice.
Yeah, and I was like 45 for 300 hurdles, which was really, really slow for a guy when I first started, and then I ended up going to like 43. I only ran like once. And the next year I dropped like 3 seconds, and then the next year I dropped like 2 seconds, and then the following year I dropped 3 seconds. So I ended up running 35 and then 300 hurdles.
You need to drop 10 seconds off then.
Yeah, by the time I was a senior, and that's really fast for 300 hurdles. And then in the 110, I went from 15 to like 14.5, and then 14.5 to 14.2, and then 14-0, and then 13-7. Yeah.
From 13-7, you're starting to get into pro athlete territory.
Well,
maybe not in the US, but I mean.
Well, but in high school, remember, our hurdles height is just like what the juniors are running. True. So.
Okay, well, let's talk about juniors then, because you went to the World Junior Championship.
I did. I went to World Juniors in Grosseto in 2004, and fun fact about that, it was the last time that they ran the 110-meter hurdles at the big boy height. So I actually ran the 400 hurdles at professional height.
Oh, really?
As a junior, yeah.
What time did you run?
I ran 13:47 as a junior over the highs. I'm pretty sure I probably would have run like 12 seconds over those lows at that point, but I didn't have that opportunity. I wasn't afforded that. We literally had to run over the 42-inch or 1. I don't know what it is in meters. 1.02 meters.
I have no idea.
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah.
Let's say about a meter. It's high.
Yeah.
It's high. So tell me about Grosseto though. Was that the first time you went to Europe?
Yep, it was my first European experience.
How did you find it?
For me, it was fine. I mean, it was.
When you won.
But. Yeah, but it was different. We actually stayed on a farm. Yeah, like the village was like on this farm, and it was crazy because we would walk to like the cafeteria from our little area, and like you'd see like these ducks and chickens, but they'd have like X's on their heads when we were walking by. So like, oh my god, they're gonna kill that, and then the next day that duck or chicken wouldn't be there.
Oh,
and
god.
So they were cooking it fresh for us, but it was funny. I never forget 2004 Grosseto, because we were having like some cramping issues because all the athletes were drinking all this Powerade. I think Powerade actually sponsored the meet. Whoa. And I feel like Powerade was relatively new at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it was super, super sugary. And like people were just cramping up and they were like, you can't drink any more Powerade, nothing but water. Like the Team USA faculty, they were just, you know, and staff, they were just like, no more Powerade. Everyone's drinking water from this point on. But it was a really good experience. You know, it was, you had that team camaraderie.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone was always out cheering for each other. And there's that nervousness because you're going against people that you haven't run against before. You're going against, it's a completely foreign experience for you because you're not racing against people in America. You're racing against people in Italy, people in, you know, Cuba. People from all over the world are at the World Juniors, mm-hmm. and it's a different level of anxiety that you have to get accustomed to.
Did that intimidate you at all?
Not really. I was so like nonchalant about it. Really, I was like, oh, well, this is different. Like, I just knew that I had the fastest time. That's all I knew, and I knew that if I just performed, that I would win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's actually the World Under 20s coming up next week in Tampere, Finland. If any young athletes who are potentially going there, or maybe not going there but could be in the future, what advice would you give to them?
My advice to any junior athlete is to, you know, make sure that you live up this experience, and it's pretty similar to what our World Championships is going to be like. Remember your competition because these are the people that you'll be seeing for the rest of your life.
Is there anybody that you saw at that competition that you continue to?
Yeah, like Dairon Robles, former world record holder, to me at juniors. Yeah, and Garfield, Darian Garfield, he was also in the World Junior Final, and he's still running for France now. Karan Clement was on my World Junior team.
Any other U.S. athletes?
Right. I mean, a lot of U.S. athletes were on my U.S. Junior team. Karan Clement, Brandon Johnson, LaShawn Merritt. I mean, you name it. Look, Allison was supposed to be on the team, but she went to the Olympics instead.
Fair enough.
She went to the Olympics. No big deal. I mean, we had
2018 as well, wasn't she?
Yeah. We had a lot of stars. Our class of 2004, like that junior team, was
star-studded.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, going a bit further down the line, you went to college and then you went into the collegiate system.
Right.
You didn't do any of the IWF events before that, did you? You only did one World Under 20s, didn't you?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how was choosing to move away from Atlanta to go to Tennessee?
I mean, it was a no-brainer for me. You know, they gave me a full scholarship. I needed to go to college or I was going to the military. And so it was either college or military. And
did
so
you
I was
like, the military?
No. So I was like, oh, we're going to college. There you go. Up, and so you got to run fast to keep your scholarship. Oh, let me just work out really hard and make sure I can keep my scholarship. And then I ran really well.
What happens if you get injured, though?
I mean, that's different.
Okay, so then it kind of let yeah. you...
But they have really good medical facilities in college areas okay. because, you know, they have football teams that are training there, getting ready for NFL as well. So,
yeah.
you know, there's really good treatment and food and all kind of stuff. Technology is just great. So that's just how it is.
So how did you find your college years? Being away from home and...
It was pretty easy. I wasn't that far away. I was only 2 hours drive away.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah, really it wasn't that far. Okay. Yeah. And so I was able to go home whenever I wanted on weekends, like Thanksgiving, I would go home. Christmas, I would go home. But yeah. most of the time I spent in Knoxville training and getting ready for like conference and NCAAs. Yeah.
So how did you find college life in general, like meeting new friends and that kind of thing?
I mean, it was definitely a good experience. I wouldn't trade it for the world. I wish I could go back to college because, you know, then you don't have the responsibility of an adult. You don't have to pay bills, you know, you don't have to worry about mortgage payments, cell phone True. Payments. I mean, you live in a carefree life, especially if you're on a full scholarship.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So there's no debt involved. So you're just living.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's pretty nice. Actually.
Yeah, it is. I wish I could go back to college and just live, but, you know, life goes on. Well,
you're here now, so it's all yeah. fine. So with the NCAAs, how many times did you win it just the...
I won NCAAs twice.
Twice?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Talk to me about your first experience of the...
My first NCAA experience was my freshman year,
mm-hmm.
and I was, like, just a rising star. Come up out of the woodworks, some guy that no one knew, and I ran like indoors. I didn't even make finals. I ran like 770 something.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't that great yet. And then
yeah,
yeah. And then my freshman year at NCAAs, I ran 13-4, which was I was still a junior.
Yeah.
And I was like big time. I got fourth at NCs as a freshman. And like I was going against national champions that had won nationals the prior year and stuff like that. It was just like, wow, this little kid. Because I was like 18 at the time. So I was super young.
Mm-hmm.
And my birthday's at the end of the year. So I was like 18 for a while. Yeah, I was 18 for a while. And so I was like, oh, yeah. I was like 18 for like 6 years. No big deal.
And then 2006, that was your first NCAA victory.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How was that going into final?
I mean, that was, you know, I was nonchalant about it again. Like, I really wasn't worried about anyone else. I was just focusing on myself. You know,
you ran 13-2 though, didn't you, for that?
Yeah, but we have two NCs. We have indoors and outdoors.
Okay.
And so I won indoors. I ran 750. One or so.
That's fast.
Yeah. And it was the prior record. I broke Terrence Tremell's 752 record. And now that's been hence broken by like Grant Holloway and Omar McLeod at that. But back in my day, you know,
back in my day,
it was pretty fast. And then I went on to run 13-20.
That's fast though.
Yeah. I ran 13-21 as junior, yeah. And then out from there, I went on to run 13-1 that year still. Like, I ran 13-12 in the race. Lu Zhang broke the world record in that same year.
Where was that?
In Lausanne, yeah. What?
So, had you turned pro after...
Yeah, I turned pro after NCs, mm-hmm. and then I went to Lausanne and
got... Was that like your first major race on the circuit?
Yeah, and I got destroyed.
Where did you go?
I was like fifth.
Oh, and no.
Fifth in 13-12.
13-12.
And was fifth, yeah.
What? Surely you were so happy with that.
Of course, I was over the moon. I was like, wow, I ran 13-12. I'm so excited. And then, like, wow, I was fifth. Wow, these guys are really running fast.
I mean, world record, so.
Yeah, I was like, man.
How was that being in that race?
It was a great experience, you know. I finally felt what it felt like to be, like, drugged to a fast time.
Dragged.
Yeah, I was drugged.
I first said drugged.
drugged across the track, you know, like dragging you across the floor.
Again, Aries is trying to visualize dragging across the floor, forgetting that it's a podcast. But
yeah, I was drugged to a Fast Time, like, by Lu Xiong. He was just so far out, and I was like, wow, let me just catch up to this guy. Didn't catch him, but, you know, I tried.
Caught him in the future, though.
So yeah.
Fast forwarding a few years, your first IWF World Champs experience was Berlin, right?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. How did you feel making your first... Was that your first senior team?
It was. So in 2009, I made my first senior team, and it was legit terrible because it wasn't... Berlin wasn't terrible. Don't get that wrong. Don't get that confused. Berlin was a great place. And I was running fast. I had run 13.1 to make the team. 13.1 was like my new norm at that point. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, pretty much one of the favorites at that point to medal. And like 5 minutes before first round, I was doing some starts. And I came over the second hurdle wrong and then went into the third hurdle off balance and landed on my lead leg ankle. And so I tore all the ligaments and fractured my leg in 2009 at Worlds. I was just, I wanted to end myself. I really did. Like, that's how I felt at the time. I was like, what? Why is this happening right now? Mm-hmm. And so I obviously didn't make it out of the first round with one leg.
So you still tried to run then?
I did. I wrapped it up and I was like, let's run because Worlds, like, and clearly I ran like 13, like 80. There's no way I was making it out of the first round with that.
Yeah.
So
how did you deal with that afterwards?
You know, it was really tough. Mm-hmm. You know, because the next year I couldn't even run because my foot was messed up so bad that I had to seek help. Like, I was going to St. Vincent's, which is a sports medicine area, mm-hmm. or practice that's in the States. I went to Germany. I was going all over the place to try to fix my foot because, like, you know, I had a stress fracture and the ligaments were just gone. So, but that recovered, and then in 11, I made my next world championship team, and that was in Daegu.
Yeah, South Korea.
Yeah, and I made my first world final there, mm-hmm. and I was fifth.
How was it making your first world final? So you've done the semis, you knew you were into the final.
Yeah, I would have made the final last time as well, but, you know, as an American, if you make the team, you're going to be in the finals if you don't mess anything up. Like, yeah. If you mess it up, then that's the only way you won't make a final.
Yeah.
As an American, because we always have the standard, and it's really, really hard to make our team because the depth of Team USA is just it's so stacked.
Yeah.
So, so I made the final. Mm-hmm. And that was when Dairon had some kind of arm entanglement with Lou, and it was a massive, massive mess up. So Dairon ended up getting disqualified because he had won, mm-hmm. and Lou had ended up getting third because Jason was second. But then Jason Richardson got promoted to first because they disqualified Lou, and then Lou was second. But what can you do?
Yeah, how did you find your first world final? You came fifth.
Yeah,
you know you should have got a medal.
No, I wasn't ready to get a medal, mm-hmm. quite yet. You know, I had some issues that I was battling. Like, my foot was... I just come over the foot thing, and then I was getting very fast. And so I was running into the first hurdle and having to back off with 8 steps. And so then the following year, we switched from 8 steps to 7 steps, and that worked out a lot better for me, mm-hmm. clearly. So...
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, well, you were clearly saving it for the big one.
No, yeah.
2012, talk to me about the year as a whole, because it started off great indoors.
2012 was, it was a good year, obviously. I broke the world record, but starting off, it was, you know, it was a building kind of thing. My whole focus in 2012 was to make the Olympic team. Like, I wasn't trying to make a world indoor team, mm-hmm. and become world indoor champion at all. Let's get that straight. Like, I was not... That was not the focus. The focus was to make the outdoor, you know, Olympic team and to, you know, compete at the Olympics because that was a childhood dream. Mm-hmm. And I magically ran super fast inside. I ran 7:43 inside. And, like, I had switched my steps from 8 steps to 7. And mm-hmm. my first time running with the 7-stride approach, I ran, like, 7:80. It was so slow. It was really bad. And then... I started dropping like tenths of seconds off because I became more fluent with the 7-step approach, and then I was 770 and then 760 and then 750. And then by the time I got to USA's, you know, you add in that USA adrenaline, mm-hmm. boom, 743.
Wow.
Yep. And I won my first national title. 743.
That was your first national title?
Yep.
Wow.
Okay. And then I ended up winning Worlds.
That was in Istanbul.
Istanbul, yep.
Yeah.
Typically, when you win nationals, you win Worlds as an American. Kind of, sort of. That's kind of what happens most of the time.
Yeah, the American team does tend to do well at the World. Yeah. World Indoors, especially.
Yeah.
So, after World Indoors, I mean, you had the label of World Indoor Champion. Mm-hmm. Did that help?
Of course, it gives you momentum. A lot of people discount indoor, mm-hmm. and I feel that's a mistake. I feel like if you can do it indoor, that shows your versatility, that shows you're able to do, you know, not just longer things, but you can function in a shorter range of space.
Yeah.
So like, you can be explosive as well, you know. It's not just, you're not just one-sided. You can't just do one event, you can mm-hmm. do multiple events because you can make the indoor team as well. So it shows your versatility as an athlete. Yeah, and so, you know, I feel like with the World Indoor title, I definitely had momentum moving forward for outdoors, because I knew that I was a much better finisher than I was a starter. And so for me to run 743, it didn't bode well for my competitors outside, because I finished my second half as much better than my first half.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I used that momentum, and then I ran very, very fast outside.
When was the first time that you went really fast outside that year, and you were like...
I ran this dual meet at Arkansas.
Okay.
And I ran like 12.99 in the round, and it was I was like, wait.
Did you mean to do that?
No. I was like, how? And I was so happy because I broke 13, and it was just like a milestone, but it was like 2.1 wind. I was like, oh my God, that's 2.1 wind. But like, even though it was 2.1 wind, I still broke the 13 second barrier, and that's just an achievement.
Mentally,
yeah. It was an achievement in itself. And so then I came back 45 minutes later and ran 13.03. Legal. And so I was like, oh, well, and this was like in April. It was very early. And I was like, wow, I mean, that's great. So then I went to Shanghai, and Liu Shang drugged me across the track, like his home track once again. He ran 12.98, like 12.98 or 97, like in the rain. It was just awful. It rained really bad. It was at 10 o'clock at night.
I remember that, actually.
He took off his shirt and was celebrating on us. I was like, man, he just destroyed us. And like, you know what? That is what I needed mm-hmm. at that time, because I knew that I was better than I was running, because I ran like 13:20 there. Traveled all the way over there. I had the fastest time, and then I lost the fastest time and was defeated by Lou. And, you know, like, I went back to training the next 2.5-3 weeks, and I was just like a monster at training. I was like, I need to train harder. I can be better than how I performed, and I need to be able to perform at a higher level on a bigger stage.
Yeah.
And then the Diamond Leagues were a big stage. Mm-hmm. And so I went back and I trained really hard, and then went to Prefontaine, and I ended up running 12.96 at Prefontaine.
That's the world lead at that point?
It wasn't, because Liu Shang beat me. He ran 12.87.
Oh.
And it was windy. It was windy again. It was like 2.3 wind. And I was just like, there's no way. Because like, if you look at the race, the flags were just like, dead.
Really?
But there was wind,
apparently.
So I was like, okay. And so I didn't end up running again until our national championships, which were in Eugene. And I ran my series is really good. I ran 13:12 in the prelims into -1.6, and then I ran 13:01 in the semi.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final I ran 12.93.
Whoa. Yeah. And that was legal?
Yeah, all legal.
How did it feel to legally go sub-13?
I felt great, because I made the Olympic team.
Wow,
like, that's what matters.
You'll get the like, little flag.
Thing. Right. I didn't care. I mean, of course I cared that I ran sub-13, but I didn't care, you know, as long as I made the Olympic team. I could have been third. As long as I made that Olympic team, I was happy.
And really?
I
was and that I, all that?
Yeah, because that's what I wanted. I wanted that team. Because, mm-hmm. like, fourth place, don't go.
Yeah.
So I needed to make the Olympic team, and I did. I made the Olympic team, and I ran 12.93, And then I went on to the Diamond League races. Crystal Palace was the next
race.
Yeah,
you ran really fast. That was
and
crazy.
I ran 12:93 in Crystal Palace, all-comers record. And I was like, wow, I ran 12:93 again. Must be really consistent. Then I went to Monaco, ran 12:93 again. Same exact time. I'm like, Jesus, can I have a that I run any faster than 12:93? I was getting pretty annoyed at that point because I couldn't run faster than 12:93. And then I didn't run again to the Olympics.
So you just ran in Monaco, and then there's what? There's a bit of, I don't know, 3 weeks, 4 week downtime between that and the Olympics.
Right.
What was the final prep that you went through during that month period?
Well, we went to Birmingham and we trained.
Was that your base camp?
Yeah. So we went to Birmingham and we trained at Team USA. It rented out the Alexander Stadium.
Yeah.
And so we had that as our base of operations.
Mm-hmm.
And we were training there for 2 weeks or so. And then after that, it was, I mean, all the work had been done. I was just staying sharp. Yeah.
So you arrive in the Olympic Village.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys go to the opening ceremony?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It was a lot of standing. It was like 8 hours of standing.
Yeah, that's the thing. Some of the British athletes aren't allowed to go because of all the standing.
Well, you know, I was late in the program.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't run until the end of the Olympics, so I was like, I'm going to the opening ceremonies because, like, I wanted to experience the full Olympic experience. I didn't want to just go there and just sit in my room and not see other events. Yeah. I wanted to go to swimming. I wanted to go to gymnastics. I wanted to see basketball. I wanted to do all these things.
Did you go and watch them?
Yeah, of course. I watched Gabby Douglas win her gold and all around.
Oh, nice.
I watched Phelps
in
swimming. I went and saw Team USA destroy somebody in basketball. Don't even know who it was, but because they won by so many, I was like, wow, this is a waste. I shouldn't have come to this because they won by like 70 points. It was crazy.
Did you go on your own with Team USA?
It was some Team USA people. Yeah.
Okay.
We were like all going and stuff. It was fun.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So how did you find the village vibe and that kind of thing? Was all that just to kind of take your mind off what was coming, or were you just really focused on?
I mean, the Olympic Village in the UK was probably, and from what I've been told, was one of the best villages, period, ever done.
Oh, really?
You know, they had, like, the cafeteria was just well done. It was clean. You had massive amounts of variety of food that you can choose from, so you didn't have to eat like one type of food. You can have all types of food, and the way that the chefs that they had come in prepared the food, it was immaculate. It was really, really nice. And then there was 24-hour McDonald's. They had calorie count. Like, the McDonald's in Europe is actually much different from the McDonald's in the States.
In what way?
And in the way that it's much cleaner, it's much more healthy food and real food as opposed to processed powdered food. It's not like that here in Europe, and we love that. It was great.
It was a huge McDonald's, actually, wasn't it?
It was massive. And it was open 24 hours.
There you go.
So, I had McDonald's a few times, not gonna lie.
I mean, it worked for you saying in 2008. So.
Yeah, I mean, it was great.
And who were you sharing with your room?
We had suites, so
okay.
It was like apartment style.
Oh, yeah.
And so we had, like, it was like six of us all in a suite.
Going into once the athletics started, that kind of thing, were you fully paying attention to everything that was going on around you, or did you start to get into the zone?
Well, when athletics started, I went to see the women's 400 meter prelim, and it was the last time I went to the track because it was so much energy in that stadium.
I mean, it was full, packed out in all the morning sessions.
Right. It was so much energy in the stadium that I was literally overwhelmed, and I started to have a panic attack. And so I was like, I can't be in the stadium anymore. I need to leave immediately. And so I walked back to my room, and I was just like hyperventilating. I was like, wow, that's a lot of energy in that stadium. I need to bottle that and not go back until it's time for me to run.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did.
So
I watched everything else from the telly and the suite. I did not go back to the track after those prelims of the 400 meters. I watched everybody on the TV until it was time for me to actually go into that stadium and compete. I never set foot back in there. Yeah, it was just too much for me.
So what was it like walking out there onto the track for the first heat? Did you just like release all of that bottled up energy?
I really was just focused on one round at a time, and one of the athletes on Team USA, she gave me some of the best advice ever, and it was Kelly Wells.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly Brinkley now, she's married. She told me to do not look up into the stands. She said, don't look up, because if you do, you'll be caught into all that, the flash, the hype. you know, it's just so much going on. Just focus on your lane. And that's exactly what I did. I took her advice and I was just like tunnel vision. Mm-hmm. I wasn't looking around. It was just like, let me get on the track and get off quick.
Did you look up after you finished?
At the Jumbotron, just to look at my race. But other than that, like once you had finished, you had to go through like a snake way of media.
Sure.
Yeah, it was like, oh God, and everyone wants to talk to you. And I remember that day vividly, the prelims, because Lou fell in the first round and I was just shocked.
Yeah.
That he, of all people, would fall in the prelims. I just couldn't believe it. And I was.
He was probably one of the joint favorites.
Of course. Of course. And like, I ran down, I checked on him, and he was getting carried by other athletes and wheeled away, and it was just awful.
How many rounds were there at that point?
There were three.
There were three at that point. Okay. Sometimes they used to do four back in the day, and I can't remember when they switched over. But.
I think it was four rounds in Beijing.
In Beijing. Okay. Mm-hmm. So. You progressed through the heats nicely. Mm-hmm. Then it's a day break normally, isn't it?
No.
I was not.
Mm-mm.
Okay, so you went. Did you lead the heats after?
Yeah, I ran the fastest first round in Olympic history. I ran 13:07.
What?
And the preliminary round.
Were you going full power? I mean, in the hurdles, it's kind of hard to take it.
No, I trotted across the line. It was pretty gross. I was just in really good shape. Yeah, I was in really good form, in really good shape. So I ran 13:07 in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the semifinal, I ran 12:94. And I was still kind of like easy.
Yeah. Still not under that 12:93.
Yeah, and then I was really comfortable at 12:94. And then the
were
final.
You leading the qualifiers again. Mm-hmm. Okay, so who was next to you? Who was like next closest behind?
Jason Richardson at the time.
Okay.
And he had run 13, like one in his semi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he ran 13, like 13 or so in his semi. And I ran 12:94 in my semi. Yeah.
So you were pretty confident going into the final.
I mean, but anything can happen. It's hurdles. I just wanted to execute the exact same way that I did in the semifinal. And that's exactly what I did. And I ran a little bit faster. I ran 12:92. But I finally broke the 12:93 barrier. You know, I broke it, 12:92. But it was into a minus wind, and I was tight because I was straining to get there.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a relaxed race, but it was still PB. So
yeah,
I was happy.
How was that when you were on the starting line for that? What was going through your mind?
Execute. Yeah. That's it. Just get it done. Just run the exact same way you've been running all year, and everything will happen for you. And that's exactly what I did. And when I crossed the line and I knew I had won, there wasn't even any like excitement. It was more, oh God, it's over.
Yeah.
Like, I was just so ready for that to be finished.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I could have fun the rest of the year. Of that moment was just so, really, really nerve-wracking, because you know, you're there, you're at the precipice, and you're really, you've trained for this, and you're leading, and you don't want to make any mistakes, so you're just so stressed out, like, let me just do this perfectly, let me execute that, so.
Nice, and then did you look up into the stands?
I didn't look up into the stands until, like, after I had collected my thoughts, once I had finished, I was like, oh God, it's over, and I went down to my knees, and I was like, thank you God, and I looked up, and I was like, because it can't, when I crossed the line, it said 12:94 again. And I was just like, really? Really? And then I just was like, whatever, I won. And then it said 12:92, and I was like, okay. Okay. Oh, yeah, but it was definitely a fun year. It was.
So what does London mean to you now after that?
Well, London's like my second home. I like going to London. It's a really nice place to be. You know, there's a lot of diversity in London. And, you know, it's a big city.
Mm-hmm.
It's just expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, later on in that year, you had, obviously, Olympic gold medal.
Mm-hmm.
But then you did something even more special afterwards. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that.
So, that was Brussels, and that was world record. And
was Liu Zhang in the race?
He wasn't. He was done for the year. He was injured.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because he ruptured his Achilles in the prelims of the Olympics.
Is that what he did in Beijing as
well?
Oh,
mm-hmm.
God.
Yeah. Yep. One of the greats ever, you know.
So, you're in Brussels for the Diamond League final.
Yep, Diamond League final, and it was the last race of my season. And, you know, if I won the meet, I won the final. And because there was a point system at that point, there was no like winner take all.
Yeah,
it was just a point system. And so I won the final, and well, the plan was to win the final, and you know, I was really almost not about to run, to be honest, because my mouth, like I had my wisdom teeth were growing in at that point. And like it was growing into my gum, and so like my mouth was really, really sore, and it was hurting really, really bad. And I was like, oh, well, I didn't get the world record in Lausanne, and I didn't get it in Berlin. It's fine. We're not gonna get it, so I should just go home because I've been in Europe for like 2 months, and I was ready to go home.
Had you not been home since you won the Olympics?
Yeah, I hadn't been home since training camp, since USA Nationals. I hadn't been home. It was a whole 2 months.
Right.
And it was like, we were in September at that point, and I had been home since like June. I was ready to go home. And so I my mouth was hurting. I didn't want to run. And then my coach was just like, well, it's just one more race and then you can go home after that. And I'm like, okay, great. And then I was just, the day, nothing was different about the day. It was just a normal day. And it was just normal. I didn't do anything different, really. I just, the only thing different that I could say I did is I stopped trying to get the world record. I was trying to get it after the Olympics, and at that point I just stopped trying. I was like, okay, well, I'm not gonna get it, doesn't matter, so I'm just gonna run now. And as soon as I stopped trying for it, that's when it happened. I remember running and just thinking to myself, man, these hurdles are really coming up fast today, like, because they come up fast anyways, but you know, I was like, they're particularly coming up fast today. I was like, oh, maybe this track is just quick. So then I cross the line, I look over, and it's like 12:81. And I just start freaking out, screaming, because it was just like, 12:81, oh my God, what is that? That's not real. And then I was like, okay, it's about to round way up, and then it rounds down to 12:80. And I'm just like screaming even more at that point. Like, it was crazy. Yeah, mind was definitely blown.
So, well, at that point, you are the greatest hurdler of all time. And still, to this day, nobody has come close to that record just yet.
Mm-hmm.
Out of any of the kind of potential up-and-coming hurdlers, do you think there's anybody that can challenge that record?
I mean, it's going to be tough. I got to tell you, it's not going to be easy, because they're going to have to run 12:07, which hasn't been done. So it's going to be hard, but you know, it's definitely possible. You can't put limitations on people. I've learned that, you know, Bolt showed us that. You can't put limitations on anybody, because just when you think 9:06 is the standard, then he runs 9:05. You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you never can put a standard on anyone, but that race was really, it was a really, really good race. And for me, it being the last race of the year, you know, when I'm tired after the Olympics, you don't really see world records after the games like that at the very last meet of the year. So that leads me to believe that I could have done that sooner.
Yeah.
When I was more fresh. So I probably could have run 12:07. Who knows?
You went into 2013 as Olympic champion, world record holder. How do you deal with that kind of pressure?
I mean, it really wasn't pressure. I was just trying to duplicate what I did the previous year. But that year I had a series of injuries that led to my demise. I mean, that's real. You know, I pulled my hamstring like indoor. So I really wanted to get the world indoor record. I wanted to take it from Colin. I really did. I was going to, it was 7:30. It's really fast. And I was training at a level that is just, I've never been able to get back to that level of training, obviously, because of the kidney transplant. But like in 2013, when I was training for indoor, you couldn't tell me that I wasn't going to run 7:20. Like, I was running so fast in training, and the times that I was running in between the hurdles, it was just out of this world. It was otherworldly. It was. And
what
was
60 meter past the best? What do you reckon you could have run out of 60?
I mean, that year, I might have been able to run 6:40 something. Like, I was running so fast on the flat, and in between the hurdles, I was just running so fast. It was crazy. And then one day, we were doing some hurdle starts, and then I took a start over one, and as soon as I took the second hurdle, my hamstring just ripped. And I'm like, oh, that's not right. My hamstring didn't do that. And it just went. my hamstring went. And, you know, I really didn't have much of a break after I, you know, broke the world record. I had about 6 or so weeks, maybe 8. And then I came right back into it. And I picked up right where I left off. Didn't miss a beat. And I was just hammering and running fast. And then my body just couldn't take it. And so then it just fell apart. And that's what happened. Tore my hamstring. So not once, not twice, but 3 times.
Oh my.
So I tore it 3 times, so I didn't run indoor, and then I went to Shanghai after my hamstring had recovered, and I tore my hamstring in Shanghai.
Nice.
Again. And I'm like, oh my God, and I have world championships coming up in Moscow, like, hamstrings torn.
Mm-hmm.
So, what are we going to do? So I went to Germany, got treatment. I was living in Germany until USA's, went into USA's. With the season's best of like 13:20 something.
Mm-hmm.
And I left USA's with 13:0 because you have to run fast at our nationals. And I was throwing up in between the rounds because I was out of shape. I really wasn't able to do much.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wasn't ready. And, you know, it was what it was. But I made the team.
Qualified. So.
Yeah, I qualified. I made the team. But then, you know, my body at that point had started to decline, and it was because my kidneys that year started to fail.
Did you have any idea at that point in time?
No, I did not know until after Moscow when I returned home that my kidneys were bad.
So you went to Moscow, you finished, was it 6th place?
I have no idea.
Don't even want to think about it.
It was 5th or 6th or something.
Yeah.
And it was just bad. And like, I was like, why can't I finish my race? What's wrong with me? And then after my European season, I went back home, and yeah, it was awful. It was like, oh yeah, your kidneys are failed, but your kidneys aren't working, by the way. You need to be seen. You need to come in. We need to do tests. And then that was the beginning of like the new Aries. Like, I went from, you know, upper echelon athlete, best ever, and then 2013, end of the year, rock bottom, plummet, and then trying to figure out if I'm still going to be able to run or not at that point. So... And in all of 2014, I was literally in the hospital every day getting treatment, trying to figure out how to save my kidneys without doing dialysis for like 10 months. Yeah, it was really, really bad.
When did you have the actual transplant?
I didn't have the transplant until 2015.
2015?
Yeah, so I went to World Championships.
Yeah, that's what
yeah.
And you were on the floor. I did it in 2015.
Yeah.
It was your sister.
Yeah, so I made the U.S. team, and I knew my kidneys were failing, like, rapidly. And I made the U.S. team, and I really didn't go public with that information until Beijing. Like, a week before Beijing is when I went public.
So you spent the whole of 2014 suffering with
mm-hmm.
it, most of 2015.
Yep.
And when was the actual operation in 2015?
It was September. It was like 3 days after I ran the final in Beijing.
So you still went to World Champs, still tried to compete, and with your kidney, how it was.
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and I meddled.
And you ran fast as well.
Yeah, I ran 13:03 because I was like, oh, this is the last race I'm ever going to run ever, because they were telling me, well, there's a really high chance that you never be able to run again after this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like borderline crushed. Yeah. I was crushed because like, yeah, you'll never run again. And I was like, a part of me believed it and a part of me didn't. And I just wanted to focus on the world championships. And so I just put it all to the back of my head and tried to give us one good showing. One more. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to be proud of that.
Yeah, of course. I'm proud of it.
Would you say you're more proud of that one than...
Than my Olympic goal? Probably, because I was so compromised. People have no idea how hard it was for me. Like, I was in between rounds. Like, I was about to pass out. I would go back to my room and fall asleep with my uniform on still. Yeah, it was really bad. I would wake up the next morning completely drained, and, like, I would put on this face. Like, I would put on a show and be like, yeah, I'm great. I'm doing good. And I wasn't. I was not doing good. I was doing really, really bad. And I just tried to appear as if I was doing good. Yeah.
Why did you decide to struggle then? If you don't want people to worry about you, but obviously, like, your health, mental health.
Yeah, well, the thing is, over the years, since I broke the world record in 2012, and then I was nowhere near my potential the subsequent years. For the years prior, I mean, I wasn't at my potential. And they're like, how'd this guy run 1280? And then he can't even break 13 seconds anymore. Like, what's wrong with him? Mm-hmm. And so, like, there was a speculation that I was on drugs and all this other nonsense. And I'm just like, look, these people have no idea what's going on. So I'm just going to shut them down mm-hmm. and let them know this is what's happening to me. And I'm a human being.
Yeah.
Things happen. And there you have it.
How is that? How hard was that to deal with in your personal
life? I mean, it was really hard because people had no idea how hard I worked to attain what I had attained in 2012. I worked extremely hard and I did everything the right way. I didn't do anything cheating. Yeah. I didn't cheat at anything. I worked my butt off and the results showed. And then even in 2015, I worked my butt off with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And the results showed, yeah. You know, I ran 13:03 at the World Championships with no kidney function at all. And then I had to go have surgery. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, the sport is just so word of mouth and so gossipy.
Yeah.
People, you know, you don't know what people are going through. You don't know what athletes are going through until you sit down and talk to the athlete. Yeah. Until then, you'll never know. You'll always be in the dark.
Yeah. So did absolutely nobody know on that US nope, team?
Nope, nobody knew until I went public.
Oh my God, wow. So after you had your kidney transplant, what did you think in terms of your track career now? Did you think it was over?
I knew that my career wasn't over once I was able to, because I told them I was going to train for the Olympics. And when I came back to training, I knew that my career wasn't over. I was like, okay, I can deal with this pain. Because there was a pain in my, where the kidney had been transplanted in my abdomen. They cut me open on the right side through my abs, and they put the kidney there, and then they stitched me back up. And then after a while, I was able to move around normally, but there was still a pain from where the suture was. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just like, oh God, I can deal with this pain. I'll be fine. And so once I got used to that pain, then I was able to actually start, you know, progressing and training. And I knew that that pain was just going to be there. And I thought it was going to be lifelong. Thank God it was just a year.
So it's a completely past for you now.
Yeah, I don't have that pain anymore. Okay. Yeah.
So dealing with that and still training, was it, I mean, you still, you made a habit of qualifying for every national team. The Olympics... I don't know, do you want to talk about Olympic trials and that kind of thing? Were you...
Oh, well, Olympic trials was... I mean, I wasn't even supposed to run that year. So, I mean, I did the impossible. Like, I literally had 5 months to prepare for the Olympics because I'd had a second surgery because I had a complication and I had to go in and have another surgery, and that scatterwalled my training another 2 months. So I couldn't, like, I wanted to start back training in October, which I did, and then I trained for 2 sessions and then had a complication and had to go in and have another surgery at the end of October. And so I didn't start training till January for the Olympics, and trials was in 6 months in June.
Yeah.
So I had 6 months to get ready from nothing because I had a kidney transplant.
Yeah.
And I almost made the Olympic team.
Yeah.
Almost. I was fourth. And 13:21. Everyone ran 13:21. Who was third, second, and third? Because Devin won with 13:00 something, 13:04 or so. But then second, third, and fourth were 13:21. We were all the same time.
Sorry.
But it came down to like the thousandth,
mm-hmm.
and I was third. I was fourth.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Thing is, though, as well, for you, if you'd have had another 2 months. To get to the Olympics.
Oh, I would have been in great form because I was, you know, the more time I had, the better
yeah.
I was going to get. And I just...
Was it hard to watch that?
I mean, it was upsetting, but I was happy for the guys that competed there. You know, it was just, it was someone else's turn. You know, it wasn't my turn anymore.
Yeah.
And that's just that. You know, like, I tried and, you know, I... learn to deal with disappointment and to deal with things that I wanted to do, and you know, it's just not my time to do these things because mm-hmm. everything happens for a reason, and you know, I'm meant for something greater.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that I'll have my time again soon.
Wow, so you went from 2016 to 2017 back to London again. Did you have any sort of premonitions about going?
I thought I was going to win London, honestly. Really? Yeah, but I hurt myself in the semifinal because the scheduling was so bad. Like, who in their right mind gives us an 8-hour gap between rounds? Like, the scheduling was the worst I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I've been doing many world championships in my entire career, and I've never seen that, ever. Yeah. Normally, we have one round, then we have a break. Yeah. We're done. We go back, we refocus on the next day, and then we have two rounds on the same day. Mm-hmm. We had one round, and then we had almost a 9-hour break, and then we're supposed to come back out and run again. I mean, I made it the next round, but as I warmed up, I started to warm up, and I strained my hamstring because it was cold in the UK that year. It was rainy. Mm-hmm. It wasn't great conditions, and I hurt myself.
Was that the semifinal?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I had the fastest time in the prelims, and I ran 14 in the prelims, and I was rather comfortable. Yeah. I was like, oh, well. Yeah, because my training had gone great up until that point, and I had run 13.0 at the Diamond League there. So I felt great. I was like, yeah, I'm going to run fast. I'm going to run 12 seconds. Mm-hmm. And I didn't because I got hurt. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Was it weird going back into the stadium again in a championship setting?
No. No, it was normal.
Just like any other?
Mm-hmm. Just like London. Mm-hmm. Olympics. Except for I didn't have on a red uniform on. I had a blue one on. That was the only difference. So, yeah.
How did you deal with not medaling in the final?
Well, I went back and refocused because I knew I was injured, and because I had been through so much in my life, like the kidney transplant and prior disappointment, like it really wasn't that big a deal to me. Mm-hmm. Like had I not gone through the experiences that I went through prior, I probably would have been just emotionally destroyed for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't. I still managed to salvage my season and was still ranked top 3 in the world. Yeah. Even though I didn't medal at Worlds. Like, I was still top 3 in the world. And, mm-hmm. you know, I still ran well at the Diamond Leagues. I won, like, 2 Diamond Leagues after that still. Like,
yeah.
I was like, why couldn't this happen? Why am I not... Yeah. Why did this happen to me? This but everything... Funny. Right. Everything happens the way it's supposed to. I'm a firm believer in that. And that just wasn't supposed to happen.
So, okay, you maybe didn't get a chance to defend your title in Rio, but Tokyo, is that in the plans?
Of course, that's obviously going to be my last Olympic Games. I'm not going to be doing any more Olympics after that, because I'd be much too old. But I hopefully plan to pull off something special, something like, you know,
12-7.
Felix Sanchez style, you know.
Yes.
He skipped one, he lost, and then he came back and won the next one. It was like a 12-year gap before he won the Olympics or something. It was like 8 years.
8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went in Athens and he went in London.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I just have to stay focused and get my whole life together, and then mm-hmm. we'll see what happens.
Well, you got Doha first, so Doha is definitely in the plans, I assume, as well.
Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, for sure.
It'll be nice and warm.
It will be nice and warm. No injuries will happen there because it'll be warm.
Fingers crossed. I mean,
yeah, I hope so.
What have you got for the rest of the season? Still, it's an off year for you guys in America. What's in your plans this year to run first?
Yeah, I mean, just to go out there and keep some level of fitness. You know, it is the off year this year, and you know, this is the only year that I'm going to be able to do what I want in a form of diet. Like, I can eat whatever I want this year.
Eat all the McDonald's you want.
All the ice cream, all the cake, because next year. And the year after that, and possibly the year after that, I'm not going to have that luxury. I'm not going to be able to eat anything but, like, lettuce and, like, a piece of meat for the next, like, 3 years. No cake, no pies, no cookies. So
what
let me just go.
Thanksgiving?
Nope. Nope.
No?
Oh. Yeah, I'm going to be struggling, but it's going to be worth it. I know it's going to be worth it.
So Portland 2021.
That's probably...
Is that the swan song?
That is, for sure. That's it. Bye, y'all. I'll see y'all.
You're tired.
Yeah, I'm definitely tired. You know, I want to do something else. I want to coach. I want to give back.
You want to coach?
I do. Cool. I do. So.
Anything else that you plan to do within the sport?
You know, maybe see me commentating, maybe.
That'd be cool, bit of punditry. Yeah. Continue on the podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, So you had a few questions from your fans on Instagram, or just supporters, whatever you want to call them.
All right.
Do you have a name for your fans?
I don't.
The believers.
I know. I don't have a name at all. Maybe I should think of one.
Yeah, your name's quite difficult to contain.
Yeah,
to
it's no Bayhive going on, you know. You know, the beehive.
Okay, right.
You know.
First question is from Flying Flow, and it is, do you think that you can run as fast as you did pre-kidney operation? And do you think you have another Olympics in you? So yeah.
Well, of course, I definitely think I have another Olympics in me, and I definitely think that I can run faster, or if not the same as I did prior to my kidney transplant. And but the reason why is because I've seen glimpses of it in training. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen myself, and I felt what it feels like to get back to that point. I just haven't manifested that in the actual competition yet. And sometimes it takes time for you to manifest that performance.
Okay, another question from, this is from Tobias Thorwood, and it is, what meal do you eat pre-race and what meal do you eat post-race?
I just eat pretty much whatever the meat has, because on the Diamond League circuit, and even at World Championships, we have catered meals, so to speak. And so the meat venue will cater our meals. And so whatever they have available to eat is what I am forced to eat. I just can't have whatever I want unless I go into the city and eat food there. But yeah, typically I'll try to eat some kind of meat, whether it be chicken or fish. And then I'll have veggies and a starch. So that's pretty standard.
Okay, another question. This is from XO Ben, and it is, what's your favorite songs to work out to?
Well, pretty much just whatever is popping at the time on radio. So, like, what's popping now? The new Drake, the new Cardi B, you know, the new Nicki Minaj, like, stuff like that that's popping, that's probably what I'm listening to.
Yep.
Stuff that's popular.
Okay. And finally, there's another question. This is this came from Twitter, and this was Chris Brown from Trans World Sport. He asked, who's better at interviewing, me or him?
Oh my God, you guys are so funny. Well, I mean...
Are we going to fall out?
Are we going to have a falling out? I don't know. You know what? I'm just going to choose not to answer that question, because I want to keep both of my friends intact. So I'm going to say that you both are equally good at interviews.
I'll take that for now. When we turn this off, though, you'll... Yeah. Sorry, Chris. So I want to recap briefly the Paris Diamond League. It was such a fantastic meeting, and it was a privilege to be there as well. There were so many amazing results. Kicking off with the men's 400 hurdles, Samba 46.98, the second man ever to go sub 47 in the 400 meter hurdles. It's unheard of. Really, really incredible times, especially with Karen McMaster and Carsten Warholm not far behind, also running really, really fast times. Another highlight for me was also seeing the two guys from the NCAAs, Michael Norman, who won the 400, and Rye Benjamin, who won the 400 hurdles. They both stepped down to run the 200 metre flat in their first international senior debut, and they both came first and second and went sub 20, which was pretty incredible. And I really briefly had the chance to catch up with Michael Norman.
I caught you yesterday in the canteen, and you said that you and Rye Benjamin, your first international meeting was in Bydgoszcz, Poland 2 years ago. Would you have ever have thought 2 years ago you would both be here, 1-2 in the Diamond League 200 metres, both sub 20?
No, you know, looking back, yeah, 2 years ago, you've progressed so much, and you know, these things that I'm doing now, I would have never thought I'd be achieving, you know, this early. So, you know, I'm really happy with how I'm progressing with track and field.
Were you surprised to go sub 20? Because it is obviously at 200 meters, and you just took the NCAA title in 400. Were you surprised?
You know, I would say more or less. You know, I was really going after this Wind Legal 19, and now that I finally hit it, you know, I'm really happy with it, and now I can just go back, watch film, and try to find my weaknesses and improve there.
I do apologize there for the sound quality. It was so loud in the mix zone. So yeah, sorry about that. Oh, away from the track, Kevin Meyer actually had a really dominant day. He competed in the triathlon, which is not really done much at Diamond Leagues, which is nice to see the multi-eventers get an opportunity to compete. in front of a Diamond League crowd. So he competed in the long jump, shot put, and the hurdles. I guess as a building block event for him going into Berlin, but he set two personal bests and very nearly three. He could have done it in the long jump, but there was a bit of an incident where he was running down the runway and nearly ran into one of the triple jumpers. Fortunately, disaster was averted, but Kevin was lovely enough as well to stop and chat to me in the mix zone as well.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Two nearly three personal bests today. How do you think that bodes for Berlin?
This is great. I think it's not perfect. I'm not perfect with my technique, but I want to do it, and I did it. So it was really great. I don't have the word to explain that. I have the feeling to do this, and I did it. So it's all great.
In the long jump, I saw you were going down the runway, and you nearly ran into Tory Franklin of the US. How do you deal with a situation like that?
That was really hard because we were four in the long jump and that was really quick. And at this moment, I was a little bit tired, and this make me go out of my long jump. So this is not our fault. That happens, but I think I could do more if it didn't happen. But yeah, that's the sport. She didn't do it on purpose. So no. I'm so glad to do 7:62. That was in 2014. I did that, so it's great to be back.
Big things for you this summer, Berlin.
Thank you.
9,000 points. That's it.
Thank you. No.
No.
I just want to win.
Yeah.
We'll
okay.
See after.
We'll see. What a talented guy. I am really excited for what he has to offer in Berlin, and he is such a lovely guy, and honestly, I know he was playing it down there, but I do think the world record is on for him. He's got all the talent. He just needs to put it together in one decathlon, and maybe Berlin in August could be the time. Multi-events aside, there was also some great sprinting. The women's 200 metres, Sharika Jackson, again proving that she is not just a 400 metre runner, dropping a 22.0, which is really, really motoring. And then also Sal Eden-Nasser winning another 400 metres, beating world champion Phyllis Francis, so not to be sniffed at, Caster Semenya as well. Perhaps one of the highlights of the meeting, running 1:54. She dropped nearly 0.8, nearly a second, I think, off her personal best. That was incredible. Another dominant win by Sandra Perkovic and Frederik Dekkers, really cementing themselves as the discus favourites of this season. As well as that, there was a magnificent men's pole vault competition. Mondo Duplantis pushing Sam Kendricks all the way, 5.90 to 5.96. And I can't wait to see Mondo compete in Tampere at the World Under 20s next week. So make sure you guys watch out for that. Outside of the Diamond League, though, there was also some brilliant results in the men's long jump again. Echevarria just is continuing his dominance. He was jumping in the 8.60s in Germany, I believe. And also there was the British Championships this weekend. There were some great sprinting results. Dina Rusher-Smith ran 10.97 again. And Lorraine Ugen set a world lead in the women's long jump of 7.05. It was a really high quality competition, actually. There was three women over 6.80. So it wouldn't be out of place at a Diamond League, actually.
Okay, well, Aries, thank you so much for taking the time out to chat to me and the rest of the podcast listeners as well. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
And also thanks for hosting as well. You did a very good job.
Thank you. You know, I'll try to be a good host.
Hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
Sure. Yeah. Whenever you guys need me, just let me know. I'm right down the hall most of the time.
Everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. I might see me at Europeans.
Oh, really?
Really. Not competing, obviously, but...
Yeah. Change allegiance.
Right. I'll be there probably watching. I'm a fan.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Okay, yeah. See you there, then.
Alrighty.
Nice. Okay, well, thank you for listening, guys, and you'll be hearing from us next time after the World Under 20s, so we will see you then. See you there, guys.
Bye. See you guys. I'm waving again to imaginary people. No one's there.
God's sake.